Is there such a thing as unemployment being too low? And just how long is it going to take for these rate hikes to cool down the economy? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's Thursday, April 7th. Good to have you with us. And because it's Thursday, today we got weekly jobless claims from the Labor Department. Initial claims, those filing for benefits for the first time, fell to 166,000, the lowest level in more than 50 years. And that's on top of last week's strong March jobs report, which revealed that we added 431,000 jobs back in the economy. That brings the unemployment rate to a pandemic low of 3.6%, very close to where we were before the pandemic. But now, hear me out here. Is it possible for that number to drop too much? Marketplace's Christian Schwab starts us off trying to find the answer.
Let's answer a bunch of questions right off the bat here. Like, can we ever reach an unemployment rate that's too low? David Wessel is an economist at the Brookings Institution.
It sounds strange, but the answer is yes, we can.
Okay, so what is considered too low?
It is very difficult to put a number on that.
Okay, let's look at the last number we got. In March, the unemployment rate was 3.6%. Is that too low?
I don't think we really know.
Wessel isn't being dodgy here. It's hard for economists to say definitively whether unemployment is too low at any given time. And it's true we're experiencing some hallmarks of low unemployment, a tight labor market, rising wages, and inflation. But, and this is a big but, we are also still experiencing the economic effects of the pandemic. It's why Elizabeth Ananot, an economist at Barnard College, says the unemployment rate does not paint the whole jobs picture.
You know, we still have a lot more people out of the job market who would like jobs.
Women, for example, are returning to work, but participation rates are still below what they were before the pandemic. And in general, Ananot says the job market itself has changed.
We're just in a bit of a disequilibrium, and we're trying to figure out what a post-COVID economy looks like.
Which means more and more, economists are wondering if the unemployment rate tells us what we think it does. Plus, if we just focus on that one number, we lose sight of all the details. For instance, unemployment among Black workers in March was 6.2%. That's almost double that of white workers. Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute says studies show that if the overall unemployment rate drops low enough,
even those gaps start to erode a little bit.
It's why he says some benefits of really low unemployment could outweigh the problems. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, after a couple of down days, things ended today looking up. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We started yesterday's show by talking about the minutes the Federal Reserve released from its March meeting, a look at the thinking behind plans to make financial conditions in this economy a little less good. Remember, the Fed has a dual mandate to help keep unemployment low, and we're pretty good there, as Kristen just laid out, and to help keep inflation under control, which isn't going so well at the moment. But if you were listening to the show yesterday, Marketplace's Justin Ho was talking about how the Fed is trying to make it harder for consumers and businesses to spend, turning down the temperature of the economy, as he put it. And while the talk captured in those minutes was about plans for future rate hikes, Justin reports that March rate increase may already be cooling things down.
Higher interest rates are already having an impact on the housing market, specifically mortgage applications.
We've seen an almost 4% drop in purchase applications over the last month.
That's Joel Kahn with the Mortgage Bankers Association. He says part of that is because there just aren't many homes for sale right now. But it's also because mortgage interest rates have risen and made mortgage payments more expensive.
What we've seen really over the last year is about a $300 or so increase in the median monthly mortgage payment.
Kahn says applications to refinance home loans have fallen by about 36% over the last month. Jim Vogel at FHN Financial says that's limiting many people's spending power.
Last year, there was about maybe $200, $250 billion of spending power that was freed up by people refinancing and taking cash out from their existing loans or their existing equity, and that goes straight into the economy.
The Fed's rate increase has affected the interest rates businesses pay, too. Vogel says they've risen about half a percentage point in the last few weeks.
Those costs may change certain expansions that they would look at in terms of infrastructure or buying new plant and equipment.
Raising borrowing costs for people and corporations and reducing spending power both cooled down demand. Sarah House, a senior economist at Wells Fargo, she says that's one way to achieve the Fed's goal of curbing inflation.
A lot of this inflation stems from the fact that we have seen such significant demand, making it hard for the production side of the economy to keep up.
House says we can expect to see interest rates rise for auto loans, too. Credit card rates could go up, making it more expensive to buy appliances and furniture on credit.
And so if you're looking at that interest component rising, that's going to affect how much you're willing to pay or how much you're willing to buy all in some of these big ticket purchases.
House says demand for those goods could already be falling as consumers spend less on goods and more on services. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Since we've spent so much time talking about interest rates, let's talk about banks, which care a great deal about those rates and use them to determine what rates they charge us for loans and, eventually, what they pay us for savings deposits. This year, several Black-owned banks across the country received long-awaited funds from the Treasury Department, part of $9 billion allocated from the government's Emergency Capital Investment Program that was set up during the pandemic. One of the goals of that investment was to expand banking for businesses in underserved communities. WUNC's Leonida Enge has the story.
The kitchen at Borico Soul Restaurant in Durham, North Carolina, is preparing for its midday lunch crowd. A gigantic pot of yellow rice and pigeon peas is on the stove, collard greens warm nearby. This spot is known for its blend of Puerto Rican Southern soul food. Owner Toriano Frederick says he's proud of the way they were able to survive the pandemic and remain open. It didn't look good in the beginning, since Borico Soul opened only a few months before everything shut down.
When we first came back, it was just me and myself here just doing curbside. And until I couldn't do that anymore.
Then his wife Serena and son Devin came in to help. He says he got a Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP, loan for $19,000. And with that, community donations, and a landlord who didn't charge rent for a while, the restaurant is still here. But Frederick says he needs more solid funding to grow and prosper.
The biggest thing for us is, you know, now putting these systems in place where we can succeed and finding the right people and plugging them in, because I think that the customers are here for us now.
Frederick says he'll need a business loan to expand. And from his downtown establishment, he can practically walk to Mechanics and Farmers Bank, or M&F as it's known. M&F just got $76 million from the U.S. Treasury Department to make loans to help support small businesses in communities of color. James Sills is CEO of M&F. He says the money is a game changer for his institution.
By having this capital, because that's really the fuel for growth, it's actually going to position our bank to become a much larger bank over time. And so that's really exciting.
M&F is one of the oldest Black-owned banks in the country. Sill says his bank has big plans for the money it received, which more than doubles its current capital on hand.
So this capital allows us to expand in the markets where we're located. It allows us to do more lending all across the state. It allows us to invest in technology. And it also allows us to do more marketing.
It's the kind of money that can make a big difference for Black entrepreneurs.
It is transformative in the sense of the fact that these institutions, these minority-serving institutions, have not seen this kind of capital really ever.
Henry McCoy leads the entrepreneurship program at North Carolina Central University's School of Business. He says this big pot of funding looks good on paper, but are the banks ready to take risks on their communities?
Banks, for the most part, are set up not to take risks. So there's a whole lot of intricacies in this that makes this a challenge to deploy that money, particularly in the Black community.
McCoy says there's a lot that can be done with a transformative grant like this one. Banks can help create affordable housing or business development ventures. But with a long history of an economic system stacked against communities of color, he says this money can only go so far. I'm Leonita Inge for Marketplace.
Coming up?
I walked in and I said, ooh, I love this place.
Sometimes you just know, you know? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 87 points, a quarter percent, to finish at 34,583. The NASDAQ was up 8 points, less than a tenth percent, to close at 13,897. And the S&P 500 lifted 19 points, 4-tenths percent, to end at 4,500. Ford slowed almost 2 8-tenths percent after a downgrade from Barclays. The ongoing shortage of microchips for vehicle manufacturing will make it hard for Ford to rebound, Barclays said. Meanwhile, egg prices have risen 52% as chickens in 22 states have contracted avian flu. U.S. Department of Agriculture statistics show that as of April 1st, 90 American poultry flocks have been hit. The outbreak has also pushed up chicken prices. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.65%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. Today is opening day for Major League Baseball. Go Cardinals. And team owners, players, and fans are all breathing a sigh of relief. Just last month, it seemed like we might not have a season at all, because for 99 days, the owners and the players were fighting over a new collective bargaining agreement. Then, on March 10th, they settled, just in time to get the season going. Now, a lot goes into collective bargaining agreements, or CBAs, especially ones of this size. That's why we asked Marketplace's Andy Euler to break it down for us.
Some of this CBA is literally inside baseball. The two sides agreed to bring the designated hitter over to the National League and add two more playoff spots. But Michael Roach, a professor in the economics department at Middle Tennessee State University, says otherwise the two sides were
arguing about money, essentially.
You're shocked, I'm sure. Roach says the owners and the players had to tackle a few big monetary issues.
One was the minimum salary that baseball players would earn.
The players got that raised by about 23%, from a little over $570,000 a year to $700,000.
The other was a competitive balance tax threshold.
That's what's commonly referred to as a luxury tax.
which is essentially the payroll level after which owners have to pay a surcharge, you know, essentially a tax on every dollar that they spend over that.
The Pittsburgh Pirates payroll was the lowest in the league at about $62 million, well under the threshold. But five teams' payrolls came in right around the $210 million limit. Boston, Houston, both New York teams, and Philadelphia. Only two teams exceeded it and paid the luxury tax. San Diego and the LA Dodgers, who blew past it by more than $75 million and had to cough up a $32 million penalty. The players wanted the threshold increased so that teams could spend more money on them before paying the quote-unquote tax. They won an increase of $20 million. Marty Conway spent 15 years working in Major League Baseball and now teaches sports industry management at Georgetown. He says reaching this new CBA is really an old-school argument between bosses and workers.
This is about the players organizing to claw back some control and some influence and being paid, frankly, for territory that they feel like they lost over the previous two collective bargaining agreements, which span approximately 10 years.
Major League Baseball's revenues soared from $8.2 billion in 2015 to over $10.7 billion in 2019. The players were negotiating for a bigger slice of the growing pie. Michael Leroy teaches labor law and labor relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He says there's an income disparity in Major League Baseball. While roughly 10% of players are making $10 million a year or more,
71% of Major League Baseball players in the past full season made less than $1 million. That's a real large number of people who aren't getting their cut of the revenues that they're generating.
And he says Major League Baseball's only going to generate more revenue. The new CBA gives teams the right to sell sponsorship patches on jerseys starting next year. And playoff expansion will reportedly mean another $85 million in TV revenue for the league. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
In addition to that new collective bargaining agreement, there's something else of note in the baseball world today. For the first time, the team from Cleveland is playing under the name Guardians. In the wake of the murder of George Floyd, Cleveland decided to change its name. It retired the team's Native American name and mascot, which were pretty racist, last year. The year prior, in 2020, Washington, D.C.'s NFL team did the same with its name, which was a racial slur against Native Americans. Now that team is called the Commanders. As Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports, economic pressures played a role in turning the corner in a long campaign.
We've had strong evidence since the early 2000s that Indian mascots are harmful, says Ariane Eason, a professor of psychology at UC Berkeley.
More than two decades of research shows that the use of Native mascots decreases Indigenous youth's self-esteem, community worth, and what they hope they can accomplish in the future.
Eason's work finds that these mascots also promote racist stereotypes of Native people
as aggressive or savage or primitive,
which makes sports fans feel comfortable dressing up in redface or hurling racist slurs at opposing teams. The American Psychological Association called for the retirement of these mascots in 2005, but it took 15 years and a different incentive for some pro teams to make the change.
Well, you know what? I think we can say conclusively in the end, it's money.
Kenneth Shropshire is CEO of the Global Sports Institute at Arizona State University. In the wake of George Floyd's murder, he says there was a national push to retire racist branding, and that put a spotlight on the Washington football team.
And that motivated a couple of key sponsors, FedEx and Nike, to say, you got to change the name.
And they did, rather than lose sponsorship deals. Crystal Echohawk is a citizen of the Pawnee Nation of Oklahoma and director of Illuminative, which focuses on media portrayals of Native people. She says Black Lives Matter helped advance this issue.
the ground had already been made fertile, right? And had been sort of sowed and tilled over decades and decades of Native-led organizing.
She hopes the same combination of social and economic pressure can topple mascots that remain.
Well, it's opening day for the Atlanta Braves. and we have teams like the Braves. We have teams like the Chicago Blackhawks.
And nearly 2,000 K-12 schools across the country still use Indian mascots, according to the National Congress of American Indians. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
It won't be news to anyone trying to buy a house these days, if you could buy a house these days, that it's rough going out there. That's what Justin was talking about earlier. Rising interest rates, bidding wars, limited supply. But if you factor in accessibility, it can make that home search even harder, a lot harder. The most recent federal study we have on accessibility comes from 2015, using data from the 2011 American Home Survey. And that found that only 3.8% of U.S. housing had what were described as moderate accommodation. Things like entrances to the homes and rooms within it that don't require going up or down steps, guardrails on the steps that do exist, grab bars in the bathrooms. All of which leads me to today's installment of our series, Adventures in Housing. Nikki Finley is a retired economist, and she went looking for an accessible home in the suburbs around Atlanta.
In 2018, I wound up in the hospital with a diagnosis that I had a neck injury. And by 2021, it was causing me a lot of trouble to get up and down the stairs in my house. And so we decided to move up our home search. We were looking in our neighborhood, and one thing became perfectly clear was we need a master on Main with a walk-in shower. No tubs, no craziness like that. I'm okay with a couple of steps here and there, but anything that was deep and hard to get through, any place where there were unexpected stairs, like a sunken living room area or something like that, just wouldn't work. There was a house that looked pretty promising, and it was beautiful on the outside. A nice craftsman style, not serious craftsman style, but a nice home with a nice yard, it looked like. We walked in, and everything was beautiful, and it was well-maintained. But it had two stories. The kitchen was huge, which I realized later was actually not a good thing. I needed the cabinets to be close enough together where I could move from one to the other without feeling like I was going to fall. In that first house I looked at, there was a lot of gap between one countertop and another. I finally got into the habit of checking Zillow first thing in the morning every day. This place just popped up, and I saw the address. We came out on Sunday. First of all, I could walk straight in the front door. It's all on one level. I will say this. It was all painted boring gray, but I walked in, and I said, "Ooh, I love this place. Can I buy it?" The kitchen is fairly easy for me to get around in, and I do have that walk-in shower that I needed, plus bathrooms on the main level, which was sorely needed. I think we'll stay here for the foreseeable future.
That was Nikki Finley out of her home in Oxford, Georgia. You can tell us about your adventure in housing at marketplace.org. We'll be right back. This final note on the way out today, some additional numbers, you might say. 53, 47, 1. That is 53 yes votes and 47 no votes in the U.S. Senate today, confirming Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson as the first Black woman to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. Here's your moment of economic context. So at the top of the show, we were talking about how low unemployment is right now. Well, that means companies have to work harder and pay more to recruit new workers. Case in point, Walmart's announcement today, it's boosting pay for truck drivers in the company's private fleet. Walmart says new drivers can make up to $110,000 in their first year, and the company's game to help people get their trucker's license to be eligible. That's one solution to supply chain issues. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.